Getting into an evangelistic conversation can be difficult, so we're going to help outline some ways that you might be able to do that today on this episode of Unapologetic, where we seek to defend truth without compromise with Dr. Bobby Conway, the One Minute Apologist. I'm your host, Tim Hall. Bobby, we have been going through and focusing on evangelism for several episodes now. We talked about the essential beliefs of Christianity. We've even done some specific beliefs of like how to talk to a Buddhist, how to talk to a Mormon, how to talk to Jehovah's Witness, how to talk to an atheist. Mm-hmm. We've even talked about how to assess where somebody is at spiritually so that you can evangelize. We talked about three mistakes that people make when they're evangelizing. And I'm sure that if anyone has checked out any of those episodes, they might be wondering, well, why is an apologetic show dealing so much with evangelism? So maybe you can help connect those dots for us. What's the difference between evangelism and apologetics?
Evangelism is the proclamation of the gospel as it relates to Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection, and how we appropriate that in our life through faith in Christ. Mm. Apologetics seeks to give a defense for why Christianity is true. So the late apologist R.C. Sproul once put it like this: evangelism and apologetics are like two wings of an airplane. You need both to fly. And so apologetics simply gets rid of the obstacles that are getting in the way of one believing. And as we've talked before on the show, some people will argue, well, why do I have to do apologetics since all people need is faith anyway? Well, we need to understand that there are certain obstacles that are preventing people from placing their faith in Christ. And in conversation, if we'll use questions like, what's preventing you from becoming a Christian? Well, when they share those preventions, what we will be armed with is material for conversation. And therefore, we can hopefully, if we're equipped, start removing one obstacle at a time. And that is how evangelism and apologetics can work together. So when you think about Paul the Apostle, it's true that God swept him off his feet in Acts 9 with an encounter of the resurrected Christ. Nevertheless, if Paul tried to impose his experience on everybody else, he would have went about saying, there's no need for apologetics. But what do we encounter with Paul? Well, when we see him in Acts 13 in the first missionary journey as they go out, he utilizes apologetics in chapter 13 and 14. That's the first missionary journey. When we come to Acts 17, where he's on Mars Hill, he utilizes apologetics. So a gifted evangelist will be aware of different approaches depending upon the context that they're trying to reach. So Paul knew that when he's with the Jews, he was able to have a wide open conversation as it related to the Hebrew scriptures because they were very familiar with it. But when you see him on Mars Hill, they're not familiar with the Hebrew scriptures. So he meets them where they are at. And so there are people who think, just preach the word, just get into the Bible. Well, I think Paul gives us a great example of how we are to be wise. So if you're equipped apologetically, you can be literally hosted with a whole plethora of arguments that can help you to be much more engaging and relevant to where people are at.
Yeah, I think that's a great distinction and a great way that we can start off the show. And one of the important things is that we are trying to focus on being able to answer some of those questions. And that's why we want to continue to encourage people to do evangelism, because it will also help them in their apologetic endeavor, like you were talking about. So we want to get really practical with the guy that has shared his faith several times. You're sharing your faith with over 100 people a week at one point in your life. And we want to get really intentional about how we can get into these conversations without doing this thing called a Jesus juke. So I'll describe what a Jesus juke is. There's a blogger, John Acuff, around 2010 kind of coined this phrase called the Jesus juke. And essentially, maybe I'll just give it an example. Like the example that he used was he posted something on Twitter that was someone that was working out. They were doing some bodybuilding and it was supposed to be funny. It was kind of a joke thing. And somebody in the comments said, wow, if only we could be that dedicated to our faith. Oh, and he said, wow, that is true, but they took something that was supposed to be funny and kind of a joke and tried to, you know, juke into something serious, and it kind of fell flat. Maybe there's a little bit more, people were mocking that comment more than really being convicted by it. So we can see these in real life conversations as well. And I'm guilty of Jesus juking on several occasions. People are talking about the game and, you know, you jump into the conversation with, well, you know who ultimately wins the day? It's God. And you're like, oh man, seriously, we're just talking about the game last night. So how do we avoid some of these Jesus jukes? And what would be, you know, some good conversation starters? What do we need to keep in mind maybe as we're going into some evangelistic conversations in different environments?
Well, as an early Christian, I would have had a hard time with the statement I'm about to say, but it's true. There's more to life than just evangelism.
Right.
I have kids. I have a wife that I need to spend time with. I have friendships. I have parents that I spend time with. There's time to read. We have to take a shower. So there is such a thing as just life. And sometimes what happens is we spiritualize everything, and then that becomes our material to make people feel guilty. Mm. And I think the church needs to get off of their high soapbox. The reality is we can be witnesses when we're at a grocery store. We can be witnesses when we're at the bank. We can be witnesses on a walk through the neighborhood. People are watching the way that we live. And so I think that we should just recognize that people are living a life. And if people are excited about having a hobby, we shouldn't demonize them for that. Sure, the hobby shouldn't be our ultimate. The Latin phrase, summum bonum, the greatest good. God is the greatest good. He's the one that we serve. But who among us has never lost sight of our priorities? All of us have.
Yeah.
And, you know, we do think sometimes like Jesus juke. We make people feel bad if they want to feel good. So for example, I was at the gym yesterday and I got asked this question, Bobby, what are your thoughts on marijuana? And I didn't just jump in and criticize the person for asking the question. I recognized something deep inside of all of us. And I said, you know, we all want to feel good, don't we?
Yeah.
And I said, the key is we just have to make sure that we feel good in the right way. And the Bible gives us some, you know, explanation for sure on the importance of sober living. But I validated that we want to feel good. And I think when people are turning to marijuana, we can often demonize them, but they want to feel good. Mm-hmm. And what we can do is help them to understand, why is it that you feel you need to escape to that to feel good? What is it about Christ that can maybe help you to feel more content in life? Because in contentment, there's sort of a feeling good that is a sanctified goodness that trumps drunkenness or getting stoned by taking multiple bong hits.
No, that's good. That's good. So one of the things that you needed to do in that situation is you needed to have some awareness of kind of where they were at and some affirmation, some empathy, but then you can use that to then continue the conversation in a direction that makes sense. What would be some other things that we could do or other things that we keep in mind, some other situations perhaps that we can use to direct the conversation towards a spiritual conversation, if you will?
I think that asking questions is huge. Mm. I don't think people ask a lot of questions because they want people asking them questions.
Right.
I really think that that's a huge part of the art of effective evangelism. I said this past weekend in my sermon too, the word evangelism can kind of sound archaic, but the reality is everybody does evangelism when it comes to what they believe in.
Yeah.
Apple's trying to evangelize you to buy the latest iPhone. Mm. Audi's trying to evangelize you to buy their new car.
Yeah.
Any company, and when they have a vision, they teach their people how to reach people with their product. And so we're not trying to reach people with a product, we're trying to reach people with the person of Jesus. And so I think that if we could recognize that every endeavor that has a vision is seeking to help others come to know it. Unfortunately, we don't always recognize how great our vision is. Mm. Not only that, one of the major obstacles is the bad reputation that the church often has. So when we start engaging Christ, we don't want to be lumped in to that bad reputation. Nevertheless, I think that if we can ask people questions about their life, about where they grew up, if they're married, do they have kids, what are their fears, what are their worries? Just connect with them. And then in time, they're going to turn around and ask us questions about ourselves. And then we can begin to insert what it is that we believe. And then we can ask questions like, are you a Christian? Or have you ever been to the church? Or do you have some struggles with it? Have you been disillusioned by it? And then we can even share. Tim, you've openly talked on this radio show, as have I, about some of our own disillusionment with the local church.
Yep.
Well, what does that do? Well, that makes us much more relevant because we're not the person who is trying to evangelize somebody that doesn't recognize that the church is replete with problems.
No, I think that's good. I want to pick up on that point of everyone, in a sense, is trying to evangelize. Everyone's trying to cast a vision for what they think is good, whether that's a company or a person or whatnot. So we got to be interviewed last week by a friend of ours and for her podcast. It was a great time, and that'll be out shortly. We'll put that on our social media when it's published. But they kind of asked a similar question to the one that we're answering today, and I loved your answer. You gave this interesting kind of walkthrough of how to assess someone's worldview and why that's important to then beginning that evangelistic conversation. So maybe we could revisit some of that topic a little bit, because I thought that was really good. Just, you know, some of the key phrases that you were drawing out were, you know, people are activists, but they're not sure why they have what the philosophy of their activism is, and just helping us unpack people's viewpoints so that we can address the conversation or move the conversation towards an evangelistic or a spiritual conversation. So what are some things that we need to keep in mind as we're trying to understand people's worldviews and where they're coming from?
So everybody has a worldview, whether they realize it or not.
Yeah.
And many people don't understand how that worldview has been shaped in their life. Our worldviews are shaped through the reading that we do, through our life experiences, through our upbringing, through the church or particular religious affiliation that we are connected to. And so I think that when we're doing evangelism, we want to understand, how is it that this person views the world?
Yeah.
How do they view it? And so we tend to have an idea or some thoughts, or we might even be agnostic about how is it that we got here? What do we believe the purpose of life is? What do we think about God? What do we think about when death happens? Do we go to heaven? Is there such a place as hell?
Yeah.
Has God made himself known? And so when we start asking questions, what we're trying to do is piece together their worldview. Mm. And then we're looking to find where their worldview lacks coherence. And if we can show them that their worldview lacks coherence, we can put a pebble in their shoe, to use the phrase of Greg Kochel.
Yeah.
And so we can help them to understand that having doubts about their worldview is a good thing. Like, when I doubt, it's because my worldview's not incoherent. And the way to fix that is to make sure I get it to cohere again.
Right.
And sometimes it's not coherent because I have a faulty belief. Sometimes it's not coherent because my emotions are trumping what I know to be true. And maybe my feelings want it to be true more than what the truth is.
Yeah.
So I think that that can be a problem. But yes, by depicting what, or by trying to understand what a person's worldview is, then we can engage them. And this helps us to get the conversation off from the right start. If you're talking to a Muslim, there's no need bringing up arguments for the existence of God.
Right.
You utilize those for the atheist. If you're talking to an agnostic who's not sure whether or not God exists, well, you can at least make this claim. There's one thing that you're not agnostic about, that there is an explanation for how we got here.
Right.
You're just not sure what the explanation is.
Yeah.
So then I would say, wouldn't you rather give your life to the best explanation instead of just throwing your hands up and not giving your life to anything? And so You want an evangelism to help people to understand the consequences for holding to their worldview. Mm. And so when we're engaging with people, if we can help them to understand that this worldview is costing them, and we help them to understand the price tag to keep that, and if we can show them that Christianity offers the most coherent, livable worldview that is the most fulfilling life vision, then maybe we can begin to eliminate some of the obstacles that are getting in the way of them placing their faith in the gospel.
Excellent, excellent. I'm gonna put you on the spot a little bit here. What are your thoughts on like evangelistic tools, like tracts or surveys? Like, how would you guide somebody in that, whether they should use them or not? How effective have you seen them in the past? Mm-hmm. What should we keep in mind if we're going to use some of those tools? Let's talk about some evangelistic tools here for a second.
I don't have a problem with tools, but I do think tools need to be revised and revisited.
Okay.
And so sometimes you look at the tools and they're really cheesy. Mm. And we don't want to come off with a sort of cheesy-anity. We got enough of that, Lord knows.
Right.
So I think when it comes to a survey, for example, there was a season when I was doing campus ministry when I was younger. If I went out now, people would be like, what's this old man doing walking around on a college campus? But when I was younger, I created a survey that asked questions. And I found that that was really helpful because it wasn't threatening. So before I created the survey, I just walk up cold turkey and ask people if I could chat with them. But once I created the survey, I could walk up and say, hey, Tim, how you doing? I'm out conducting a survey. I'm trying to get 100 of these done this week. Mm. And I just was wondering if you would participate. There's no, fear and how to answer. I'm not here to beat you up. And then I would come up with like 5 questions. You know, do you think that God exists? What do you think about the person of Jesus? Do you have a relationship with him? Do you think he can make a difference in people's life? If you don't believe, why not? Something like that, right? Yeah. So you ask those questions. Everybody likes to be a part of a survey.
Yeah.
Well, that's not true. Everybody doesn't like to be a part of a survey, but most people like to be a part of a survey. And what I found then is after they answer those questions, well, guess what? I can begin to engage because I just found out their worldview.
Right.
I found out their worldview in about 5 questions. So I think surveys do have a place. Mm-hmm. I think that we need to let people know that we're not there to beat them up. Some people get so passionate, they just ridicule people, and they really don't help our witness for the church. I think that tracts can serve a place. For example, if you're meeting somebody and you don't have a lot of time to chat, you could give them one. Joe Gibbs, the wonderful coach. He's one of the most well-known coaches of all time, Hall of Fame coach. He used to go to a church that I pastored. But for a long time, I kept bumping into him at Starbucks and different places. And every time I bump into him, he'd hand me a track. It was creative because it was his face on the front and it was kind of his story and he kind of led it to Jesus. And eventually I was like, Coach, I'm stacking these up, bro. I didn't call him bro, but I said, I've got a lot of these tracks. Well, that became this big joke once he became part of the church and I was his pastor.
Yeah.
But I just want to say there is a place for this stuff. If you're going to make a track, though, make it presentable.
Yeah.
Make it look good. Use good language. Avoid Christianese. If you're going to use a survey, there's a place for that. When it comes to methodologies, there's lots of different methodologies, but we must remember that there's lots of different methodologies. Not one of them is something you're going to find in the Bible.
Yeah.
So I think different tools can help us. In the same way with apologetics, we talk about, are you a presuppositionalist or a classical apologist,
right,
or
an evidentialist,
these different types, or a combinationalist.
Yeah.
I think that you can look at those, and there's different approaches that can help you given where you are.
Yeah, that's excellent. So we're going to talk real quickly. You and I had talked before about this event that we did where we had some guys over my house and we kind of just had a spiritual conversation. I love that method of evangelizing. So, essentially, we're looking for people that have connections, relationships with other folks. We're inviting them into a circle where it's kind of known that we're going to maybe have a spiritual conversation. We're going to get to know each other on a little bit of a deeper level. And I thought, the times that I've done that, they've been really fruitful because people aren't blindsided in that sense. They're not Jesus juked at all. They're saying, okay, I know that I'm coming into this conversation. I know that we're probably going to talk about some, you know, big metaphysical topics and topics about reality, some topics about religion or whatnot. How do we need to think about maybe setting those up, or what place do they have in our evangelism tool belt, if you will?
I remember listening to Lee Strobel give a good example of how we can begin discipling people. He said, if you live in a neighborhood, like we all want to turn, right, our strangerhoods into our neighborhoods, as I like to say, what can we do? Well, invite people over. I remember one time on a Thursday night, I passed out invitations for a coffee and dessert at our house on a Sunday night. Hmm. I had 24 people from our neighborhood show up for coffee and dessert.
Yeah,
I wish I would have done more of that. As a pastor, I got busy. But what Strobel suggested is this. What if you were to invite people from your neighborhood, and they come out and you just have coffee, dessert, you fellowship with them, and you just pull them together, get people to introduce themselves, and then you could say something like, you know what, next week I'm going to start a discussion group. Hmm. And I was just wondering if you would be interested in participating. And the way this is going to go is the title of it's going to be something like this. If you could ask God one question, what would it be? He went around the room, and one person was like, well, why did God allow my husband to die? Oh, this person wants to know about the problem of suffering and evil. Yeah. The other person was like, I don't understand how God could let people that have never heard the gospel not spend eternity with them. Oh, you're wondering about the fate of those who've never heard.
Yeah.
I'm struggling with the Bible, and is it reliable? And so basically, after you hear their questions and you say, great, well, next week we'll start with your question, Tim. And so they have some buy-in because their question's going to get answered, and it's organic. And I think that that's a great way for us just to connect with people and start discipling our neighbors.
That's excellent. I want to end with kind of what has been, at least the last maybe 15 or 20 years, the primary way that people evangelize is they invite them to church on the weekend. Yep. How should we think about a mere invitation to attend a weekend service in our evangelistic tool belt?
I do think it's important that we continue to invite people to church. But I don't think that inviting people to church gets us off the evangelistic hook. I think we still have a responsibility to be working with people. The reason we invite people to church is because we want them to have a church, a community, a place where they can serve, a place where they can have fellowship, a place where they can hear the gospel and be discipled and go out and be missional. But we still have to equip the church to do the work of ministry. That's the Ephesians 4 model, and that's the call of pastors to equip the saints for the work of ministry.
Yeah.
So I do think when we put an emphasis on inviting people to church, that's a good thing. And I think we need to do even more of that. But I think we have to even put a greater emphasis on helping our people in our congregations to recognize their role in the Great Commission and helping them to be aware when they're in conversations, to have a heightened awareness of how can I turn this conversation into a spiritual conversation? How can I be open to opportunities? I'm not sure many Christians are waking up and they're thinking about opportunities to share Jesus. I think that when we think about it, it scares us. And I think that part of the job of the church is to help remove those fears by saying, make it natural.
Yeah.
Ask questions. This doesn't mean you have to be weird. Nevertheless, we can't promise that when we do share the gospel, that it's always going to be received well. We really probably can promise that it's going to get mixed reviews. Yeah. And Jesus did warn us of that. But I do think that even though people might not like what we had to say, I think it's possible with some tact that they can still end up liking us.
Well, that's amazing. Thank you so much for giving us a framework for how to think about entering into evangelistic conversations, Bobby, and how it ties to apologetics and maybe some of these different environments, these different tools that we can use to continue the evangelistic conversation. For those of us that are checking out this episode on the radio, we would invite you to head on over to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/oneminuteapologist, subscribe. You can watch this video again, and you can watch the other videos that we had on this topic as well. Like I said, we've talked about a number of different worldviews, the Christian beliefs specifically, and some mistakes to avoid when evangelizing, and then how to assess when to share the gospel are all really valuable episodes of the Unapologetic Show that would help you in your endeavor of evangelism. Thank you again, Bobby, so much.
You bet.
And we'll meet you again next time on the Unapologetic Show. You've been listening to Unapologetic with Dr. Bobby Conway, the One-Minute Apologist. I am your host, Tim Hall. Be sure to listen to Bobby on Pastor's Perspective Monday through Thursday, as well as like, share, and subscribe to the One-Minute Apologist YouTube channel, where we have over 1,000 videos. We would also like to remind you that this is a listener-supported program. We would greatly appreciate your support in any amount so we could continue to provide this ministry. If you would like to be a part of our team in any capacity, please visit our website at oneminuteapologist.com. And while you're there, check out all of Bobby's books, courses, and even invite him to speak at your church or event. Thank you for listening to Unapologetic, where we defend truth without compromise. This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa.